Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome to another episode of your Storybox podcast, where I, your esteemed host, Jay Phantom, has the utmost privilege and honour to unbox amazing stories from incredible people twice a week. I'm delighted and grateful that you're here today. Now let's dive into the story box and hear more about our guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode number 38 with one of Australia's leading life coaches, presenters, and successful businessmen, Matt Purcell. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Storybox podcast. I'm so glad that you've decided to tune in today. Guys, this week on the Storybox, we dive into the awesome story of Matt Purcell. Now, if you don't know who Matt Purcell is, he is one of Australia's leading life coaches, presenters. He's also a successful businessman and an accomplished musician and songwriter. This guy does it all, and he's very, very gifted and talented. He's also a content creator. He runs a number one podcast on Apple and Spotify called The Examine Life, one of the podcasts that I listen to and absolutely love the deep dive conversations that he does with people. I was delighted to get to meet Matt for the first time and really just have a talk with him, just sit down with him and have a good conversation. It's one of my favorite conversations, actually, that I've been able to do, because it was real. And we just sat down in a local cafe in Manly and dived into a little bit of his life and his faith as well, how music played a role for him in school and how it's played a role for him now later on in life. We also get to talking about Matt's faith. So Matt is a Christian, and how his relationship with God affects his life and how it was reinforced in school and why that is the most important thing for your life, or why it should be the most important thing for your life right now. Perfectionism, what is it? Why is it a problem, or is it a problem in your life? And how can we not become so focused on being perfect? And then we also talk about setting your aim and holding to a high standard. I mean, a lot of people have this high standard that they create for themselves about being perfect, really. So we get talking about that. Judgments, what you should be focusing on when people actually judge you. Purpose, this is a big one that we actually talk about. What is it, and how does someone actually find their purpose in struggle, and why we need purpose in life? And he gives a couple of good examples in that. In the interview as well. Purpose isn't just the destination, okay? And there's a lot more to that quote, which he elaborates on in the interview. And what do you want out of life? So there's another question that Matt sort of elaborates on a little bit more, and we dive a little bit deeper into that, which is great. So a lot of us are actually searching for our purpose at the moment. So do we actually end up finding it? You'll find out in this episode. But this is a really good chat. Matt and I really dive deep, and I'm really, really thankful for him and his ministry as well, what he's been able to do. He's got some amazing guests on his podcast, so I encourage you guys to go and listen to that. He's helped me a lot with his content and his advice as well along the way. So I do appreciate you guys once again, but you know what time it is. Now for me to be quiet and for you guys to dive into the story box, or for all of us really to dive into the story box and hear Matt Purcell's amazing story. So I'm sitting here with Matt Purcell. So thank you so much, Matt, for coming on the story box podcast. Really appreciate it.
No worries,
so to start off with, before we actually get into like your journey and what your story is like, I have a question that I like asking people, and that is, what does success look like to you? How do you define success?
Success is a combination of being healthy physically, mentally, and spiritually. I think healthy across three spheres, like the old philosophical idea of being healthy physically, mentally, and being wise as well. So healthy, wealthy, and wise, that's success. And I think you can overemphasize one over the other three. So you can be super healthy but not wise. And what's the point of that? You look good and you can run really well and you might live long, but and you might be wealthy but not healthy, and you'll die before you can enjoy any of it. And then you could have two of them and not have wisdom and then be an idiot. So
that's good, man. So what do you think wisdom is, and how do we actually achieve wisdom? Can we achieve it?
Wisdom to me is a combination of experience, learning from trial and error. So a child can learn what is painful and what is pleasurable, and when you repeat things, I think that's common sense. We can agree on that. But wisdom's also understanding. So it's not just knowing something that's broad, like many subjects that are broad, but it's having depth of something. So Einstein said that if you can't explain what you know to a six-year-old child, you don't understand something well enough. And I think that's important. Wisdom is about understanding, and also it has a practical element to it. You've got to do, you've got to kind of be a doer of the word. Yeah, I think it's important. Not a hearer only. Not just a talker. I'm big on doing. So wise people can say it, they can talk really with a lot of understanding, but they should have something to show for it over the years.
And that's interesting how wisdom sort of translates into success, into that definition. I find that very interesting. So I usually like asking people what success is, because everyone's got a different understanding of what success actually looks like to them, what it is. So I think it's very important for people to understand this concept. Like it's a big, big concept.
It is.
So now moving towards your thank you, man, for sharing that. So moving towards your story now. So who is Matt Purcell? Like, where did Matt Purcell come from? What's your story?
Yeah, well, for those listening, you'd hear my voice and not probably assume that I'm a Korean-looking man. Like, it's a strange thing. So I was adopted when I was 4 months old from Korea. And my Australian parents, they look nothing like me, so it looks like they kidnapped me. but they didn't. They went over to Korea and got me, and I've got an adopted sister from Taiwan, and we're very close. And so I kind of, my background is one, adoption, not knowing my biological parents, so I'm a bit of a mystery to myself. And then second is my family loved me to bits and my sister to bits, and they were always open about my adoption. But when they separated when I was six, I kind of rebelled against everything because I felt abandoned again. Like intuitively I felt, oh, crap, you know. It wasn't a very clean break. It was messy. And so I was told things as a kid I shouldn't have been told by both parents, unfortunately, because they were hurting too. So your mum's this, your dad's this. So I was like, well, you both suck because you're both obviously terrible. So I was searching a long time for certainty. I didn't know it at the time. I was always gravitating toward confident-looking people to my detriment sometimes, mucking up at school or rebelling against authority just to get attention, because I just didn't feel like I got maybe enough of that. Because I moved house 13 times as a kid, so people who might follow me on socials, I've been grinding, I've been hustling really hard, but I came from this background of, we moved a lot. When I got suspended a couple of times, my mum suffered pretty poorly, because for example, one time, we strategically ate out at Nana's house and Uncle's house and stuff because we couldn't afford to have, we were tight that week, because of that suspension. So it's,
So do you not know who your biological parents are to this day?
No, I don't. I lodged a search. There's 80 million people in Korea. My birth mother, I was a product of a one night stand, I was told by the orphanage. So my dad doesn't know I exist, and my birth mother left not many details. So she gave birth to me on the barn floor. So she was actually like a country girl, didn't know she was pregnant because she was severely undereducated. And she was quite the orphanage said that she was quite, they said fat. And I'm like, wow, that's a bit blunt, but like they were like, yeah, but she was round in stature. That's why it hid her pregnancy symptoms. I'm like, wow, that's hectic. So she gave birth to me somehow. There's a lot of complications of birth. Like, I mean, I've got two daughters and I've been through it twice. I did all the work. No, I'm just joking. And then bloody, I don't know how I'm pretty lucky. Something could have gone wrong. And yeah. I'm a bit weird. That's probably a result of it. But
good to be weird, man. Nothing wrong with that. So what was it like, what was going through your mind as a kid? So that kind of moving houses all the time, that kind of separation, that would do an actual number on someone's brain that young, because you're in a stage of development.
Mm.
So what did that do for you?
I just was craving structure. And I think my mind was a bit chaotic because I didn't think anything was certain, like anything was like permanent. That's a better word, permanent. Until my mum remarried years later to someone and they inherited a place. So that was pretty cool. So that way we had a set location after moving so many times. So I was in a place of, well, I in a good way, actually in hindsight, I think it's created a lot of contentment now because I had to do with what I had. I had to accept with, I had to roll with the clothes I had, the resources we had, and kind of hold on to things very loosely, just in preparation that it could just go. And that's a pretty stoic way of living anyway.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was kind of forced to think like that. I was like, ah, oh, we could be here a while. My next door neighbors just made friends with, they might not be my friends for long.
So, what was your schooling like because of that constant moving around? Did you go, how many schools did you end up going to?
I went to three schools. My dad made sure that we went to a private school, like a Christian school.
Yep.
And they were pretty good. So we had the same school for a long time, although we moved a lot of times.
Mm.
So we just commuted with buses and things, different routes, yeah.
And what was the actual experience like for you in school? Were you a good student? Did you like school?
I think I was a punish to a lot of people with some things. Like, I think younger, I was pretty big larrikin. I'd muck up a lot and crack funnies. It was fun. I'd try and wear a class all I could to play sport. Like, I love sport. So I wouldn't. I could have applied myself a lot more. I say this to students all the time. I could have. But there were always other things that were more interesting than me, like music and creativity and sports and hanging out and having a good laugh. So I could have academically performed a lot better. I had a lot of potential, but I just didn't put the effort in because I would, in high school, put myself out there to play for people's HSC music. So I started getting a bit of pocket money for that and also getting off class for that. And my school recognized me as a talent. So they were kind of behind me to my own detriment academically.
Did you teach yourself music? Where did that come from?
I had a great tutor. My first tutor was great. Actually, my first tutor was terrible. Like, I almost quit music altogether. His name was Steve. Steve, you almost made me quit music.
Shout out, Steve.
Yeah. And he was pretty strict, and strictness is fine to a degree, but he was extremely strict. So there's no oxygen left, no room left for fun or conversation or relationship. Very relational person. So I needed to connect with someone. So I found another tutor, and he was fantastic and really saw talent and saw the and encouraged me to be more original with stuff. So yeah, that's how that kind of began. And then after that, I was on my way to learning things myself. So I was always someone who would be, if I was at your place as a teenager watching a movie, I'd excuse myself, sneak out and steal the family guitar and just jam for half an hour and come back in and be like, where the heck did you go? Just jamming. I always just loved it.
In the backyard. Mm. Yeah, that's good, man. And so in school, like, you were taught about Christianity, Christ. Mm. Did you end up becoming a Christian?
In school? Not directly from school. I think school, they have chapel every fortnight. They had biblical studies. I more became a Christian when I was 13 at a youth conference. that my mate dragged me to. So I was going to church as a kid because my mum went to church, but I was always just colouring in or drawing or mucking around at the back. I wasn't really listening.
Yeah.
And I saw my mum at the front, you know, getting prayed for and things like that. So that, they were a great support to her. So I always knew that church was a positive thing for my family. They're always great to us.
Mm.
And so, I have faith. My faith journey began when I was about 13. And then because I was reinforced by school, although my school had a pretty, I don't know, I was pushing them when I joined the chapel team and stuff like that, because I was like, oh, this is, teachers, you can try and control everything. They're like, you know, like, let's kind of keep this about the students, yeah. So I was a punished that way to people. It was always like asking why a lot, like.
Yep.
Mm.
That's good though. It's good that you've been able to have a Christian sort of base, and it's good that you accepted Christ when you were 13, and that's where your faith sort of began. Mm. Has that impacted the things that you do today?
I think it's the most important thing. I think because how you treat people in life is determined by your values, and your values are derived from, you know, like your beliefs, I think. And I think it explains a lot of mistreatment of people. I think it explains a lot of harsh treatment throughout history, like treating races and genders and things so differently. It's like all filtered through a belief. And it's dealing with people is one of the most important things you're ever going to have to learn to do in any situation. So it's being a Christian and having something to reference to that's objective, that helps you value yourself and also value others. It's vitally important.
Mm.
It helps me treat people with more respect, less judge people less from, and it's always something I have to keep in check, but it's something that always holds me to a standard. Because if I ask anybody, it's like, okay, the Olympic Games has a sport called the high jump. What level do you have to, what height do you have to jump over in order for it to be qualify? It's like, it's pretty high because it's called high jump, not low jump. So you gotta have a certain standard. And I think Christ and Christianity holds me to a standard which I can't, I have, it's important that I'm held to a high standard.
Mm.
Not, and maybe some people are like, oh, perfection is not important, but it's no excuse to just go low jump and treat everyone like crap, or like to be lazy or to be unfit and to be nihilistic about life.
Do you think there is such a word as perfection?
I think perfection is subjective. We're always like in English, my favorite subject in school was English, I think, because essay writing was fun. And one of the first things they get you to do is define the definition, define what you're talking about. Because we could go around where we are right now in this beautiful cafe and ask everyone here, what's perfection to you? And they'll be like, oh, my wife, or this idea, or this. And it could be different to what we think. But that's why it's so important that you've got to have something to believe in, or something that gives you meaning, because that, I think perfection is kind of a trap to a lot of people. And I think you should probably aim for an ideal, not a person, but an ideal. Like the Christianity holds those things. It's like, here's some things that you should, if you can aim to be like this every day, even though you might miss it, you're going to improve. And if you don't do that, then you're probably going to go backwards, because it's like that standard again. It holds you to something,
and
that's important.
In Christianity, Christ set the ultimate standard for the way we should be living as Christians. That's what I believe. But, you know, sometimes I feel like you said, perfection is kind of like a trap that people sort of struggle with, and it sort of ruins their identity a little bit, because they're reaching for something that's not attainable. In retrospect, like, you can't, no one was perfect except for Jesus. Like, if you look at perfectionism from the way of like sin, we are human beings, we are all sinful. The only way we can't, because we're human, the only person that ever lived that was sinless and was perfect was Christ. So that like if we look at it like that, it just changes our perspective on perfectionism as a whole.
Yeah, and I think perfectionism could be disguised as like bad comparison.
Yeah.
So like they're this and I'm that, but I feel like I need to be them. And they have these features, they have these qualities, they have these virtues about them. And but it's not taking in context where you're born and what your story is and what your talents are and who's in your life and what your vices are. So that's why perfection doesn't work. I think Christ looks at every single person's life and fits it to their context rather than tries to say you have to be born here and you have to, because that's what the problem with socials are and all that when you're comparing people to yourself, is that it's not fairly judging anyone. It's not fairly judging yourself.
No.
Like, Christ is a fair judge, and fair judgment is important. I say this to people in seminars. It's like, you can judge, but you've got to judge fairly. We all have to judge. We have to make judgments of this is better for me, this is worse for me. That person seems to be good for me. That person seems to take me in the wrong direction. Over time, you can tell. That's a judgment, but you got to ask yourself, are we judging fairly? Are we judging ourselves? And what are the criteria of a fair judge? And we could all unpack that together. And we'll probably arrive at the same ideal. Like they should be less quick to judge from a couple of things. You know, they should take into account all these considerations of where are they from, what's their motive, yada, yada. And where do I stand in that?
That's good, man. I appreciate you giving us insight into that. So I want to talk to about purpose. Like, what do you think purpose gives people?
Without purpose, there isn't much motivation to do anything apart from sit on your chair and just be a creature of comfort. Like, I think that's – if you don't have purpose for school, you probably aren't going to study. If you don't have a purpose for health, you're not going to really push yourself. So the purpose isn't really the destination, but meaning – I think meaning and purpose go hand in hand. If you don't have a meaning for your life, and what is meaning? I guess it's responsibility. You got to have something to aim for in life that gives you a sense of duty. And if you don't have that, then you're going to do the bare minimum. If you do have that, but if you have I have meaning and purpose to be alive today. I have a family. I have family and friends. Like, I've got a spouse. I've got a workplace, I live in a country, I've got responsibilities as a civilian, as a family member, as a brother, you got all these things around you. You got to ask yourself, how am I as a brother? How am I as an employee? How am I as a worker? How am I as this? I think we tend to venture outside of what we actually are involved in right now. I think it's good to ask ourselves, what is life presented me? Who is in my world? What's in my hand, and ask how can I make that better? And what do you want in life? And I think when I've given myself a purpose or I've felt like I have purpose for something, it's never hard. It's hard, but it's not like, I have to do this. It's like, I get to do this. I get to go to work, whereas I have to go to work. I get to take my kids to ballet today.
Yeah. So how do you think people are able to find their sense of purpose in life? Because it is a very difficult thing. Like, I know for myself, last year I kind of was lost, like trying to find who I was as a person, what I was meant to be doing. And I know for me that was a hard period of time. And it did take time before I actually found it. And I believe God enabled me to find what he wanted me to do. But what advice would you give to someone kind of looking, searching for their purpose?
I think if you are aimless, if you feel like you're in a similar place as Jay, I've been that place too, where you feel lost and overwhelmed by options, all these, I could do this, I should do this, I would do this, then I think the best place to start is to, once again, ask, sit at your sit somewhere real quiet, and ask yourself out loud and see whether this will actually work. If you actually ask yourself something out loud or ask yourself a question like to God or to, if you don't believe in God, to the universe, whoever you want to call it to you, it will work. What can I do today? What three things can I do today that would make my life a little better tomorrow? And it just takes the pressure off for a second of trying to find out this epic question of why am I here? Because to be honest, to be quite frank, I think a lot of people try and think that this answer is easy to understand and it should be a given. It's not. I think it's evolution. It's the hunt. It's the absolute question that everyone, you might be 50 before you find it. You might be 20. You might be 14. So there's no real like, oh, yeah, you need to be married by this kind of time or you need to be have your license by this date. It's not like that with purpose. I think you've got to look not at materialism, like at this stuff or like looking at other people. I think you got to go under the surface and be like, okay, what am I as a as a human being, what am I? Well, I am someone who gives life to dead things because I give all the clothes on my back are dead. The phone I use is dead. Everything is meaningless without my attention, my approval, my attendance. I'm valuable. Regardless of what I do, I'm living and I give life to things that aren't living. So straight away I have values from that statement. Second thing is, well, what can I make right in the world, in my world? Start with what's in front of you rather than be like, oh, what's my purpose? What's my meaning? And we straight away go to solving the world's issues and stuff. It's like, yeah, you'll get there. But like use your family. If you've got close friends and family, you need to be talking a lot to them about this stuff. How do you see me? And it's important that you get feedback from people because this is like a really, I guess it's a really like underrated method, is that using people as a mirror and a sounding board, because you can't see your own reflection without a mirror. You can't actually see the back of your head. Like a major percent of your body you can't see. So how the hell are you meant to assume that you know who you are when you can't actually physically see anything of your body? You can't even see your own face. So it's like we need, that's what the Bible offers, like, and a lot of religions offer, is a answer to who you are, because you can't, like in war, you're back to back with another soldier because I've got your back, to war term, to say that literally you can't see your back, but I'm your eyes. And therefore you're my eyes. Mm. And together we can see full around us. So we actually need community to be able to help us, give us feedback, and then we come up with our own conclusion. And then the third part is, well, what upsets me about my world? What upsets me about my family? What upsets me about my city? And what, like Moses, when God asked Moses, what's in your hand? It's like, well, let's try and be part of something, or let's like volunteer, let's experience, let's be part of a solution, he says. So you might insert yourself in some type of charity or business or group to be able to see where that might lead. You've got to, the answers won't, I think we'll, if you ask yourself these questions, the next step will become apparent, and just be willing to know that that's, if you can find out what one step is, that's enough. Mm-hmm. And then you can't get the next answer until you've taken the first step. And then when you get to the first step, you'll get to the next level and the next level, rather than jumping from kindy to year 12 in one leap. It's like you've got to be willing to go through those steps.
Yeah, that's good, man. That's exactly what I had to do for myself. Like last year, I had to sit down and ask myself, why? Why am I here? What am I meant to be doing? And then just following those steps. Like it took time, but I eventually got there, you know, with prayer, with asking people, you know, and it was through the weirdest thing, like sitting down with a CEO of a major company, asking me the question, why do you want to be here? Why do you want to work for me? And then I said to myself, well, I want to help people. I want to help people like realize their worth. And he's like, good. And then I went home and I thought about that even more. And I said, am I going to be helping people the way I really need to be helping them? Like I can get them a job, but is that going to
like be substantial. Where's the value? Like, am I helping people realize the true worth?
Mm.
You know, and I decided at the end of it, I'm like, well, not really. You know, so I turned down that job, and it was a huge job, lots of money, starting off, big incentives, all that sort of stuff. But for me, it wasn't about that. For me, it was about, I knew that what I was doing was right. Not going that direction and going a different direction. And that's where the podcast started.
Mm.
And that's where reaching out to people and going to uni, studying to be a teacher, because I felt like I could help students or young people relate a little bit to what I've been through.
Mm.
And I'll be able to help them.
Mm.
Now, sort of speaking to some things that you do as well, you go to schools and you speak to young people. And so where did that come from? Why do you do that?
Well, I think it even goes further back than I thought. Like when I first left school, I was given the opportunity to play music before a big speaker at a seminar, and this seminar speaker was quite in demand at the time, and he heard me play and share a few jokes and share my story a bit, and he's like, oh, can you come along with me on the road a bit? And he ran this charity that went into schools, and this charity raised money to be able to provide seminars for free to schools that couldn't afford it usually. Mm. So I really liked that. And then I became – that experience pretty much – gave me the feeling that I want to be part of this stuff. I was exposed to the problems in rural areas like Cobar to Lightning Ridge to Broken Hill to Northern Territory to Melbourne City to Sydney and Hunter, and they're all the same, some more severe than others. And the thing I just saw was this, the school system, it's unfair to say that the school system should provide everything that a child needs, because that's just unfair to say that to anyone, to any institution. A lot of it's on family. A lot of it's on the community. Like, don't say the schools. Like, school doesn't teach you about how to do this. It's like, well, shouldn't the family be doing that? Like, that's a good call. Like, but so it showed me that I need, there is a lot of need out there for mentors, people that can fill the gap where school and families aren't. So that's where, like, wow, that led me to want to learn about coaching, and I saw people breaking down, and that's what led me to study mental health. And so it was exposure to issues. That's probably another point to add, is that if you're looking for what you want to do in life, just expose yourself to a lot of, like, issues in the world that slightly interest you, or volunteer. That's why volunteering is so important. It's not about the experience of school share. It's like experience to the actual problem you're meeting. So, yeah, that's how it started. And even in school, I always wanted to help out the kids that were ostracized. So there was a kid named Nathan in my school who was severely disabled. He'd make random noises at the back of the room. It was quite humorous. But one time he shat himself, like, in assembly, and I could smell it, and everyone could smell it. And I looked at Nathan. He was curled up in a ball. And I'm like, mate, let's get you out of here. And I was in year five. Yeah. And I took him to the toilets and I washed him up. And my teacher found me. He's like, you shouldn't have to have to do this. That's so good. And I looked after him until year 12. Like, always looked out for that kid. And wasn't told to do it, but I've always loved helping people that just were easy targets. Mm-hmm. And probably it came from my adoption. It actually makes sense probably why I care about that. It's some personal experience I've had too.
I think personal experience is the best teacher, the best motivator, and the best example. Oftentimes that people can see, you know, or for you yourself being wanting to help. Like, it's the same for me wanting, because of my experience, what I've been through as well, not anywhere close to being adopted. You know, I grew up in a stable family, but then there was like those sort of breaks in between, so that sort of made me want to help people realize their true potential. Now, you've also got a podcast, the number one podcast, called The Examined Life, and you're a motivational speaker. You do all these sorts of things as a business. You got the Mentored as well. So where did all that come from? So similar thing from
Yes, it was all evolution, like from traveling with this guy around schools, learning, being exposed to a lot of issues in people's lives, family. I started a business that aimed to meet those needs in schools. So providing tuition, coaching, camps. That's called the Green Room. There's two campuses in Waters Bay and Newcastle area. That's great. I love that. And then from there, I have always been a musician and creative and had to be my own manager, my own marketer, my own everything, because it was just too expensive to find other people. So I had to learn how to, if I wanted a gig, I had to find out what venues would give me a gig without through an agency, and then what agencies were there and what did I need to do to that. So I had to research, I had to create everything you needed to have to be able to get in the door. So that led me to go, well, when social media started happening, like, well, there's a massive issue where businesses are getting outdone by people who actually know how to do this. And I was already primed and ready to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, there's a problem there I'm looking to solve, and that's through digital. And I've already been doing it for many years. So I met Mark. Mark was my first. Mark Boris, he's one of Australia's top business guys. So I, through a contact and through absolute luck, he agreed to do a podcast, which he hardly does podcasts. But like,
no, he actually, sorry to interject, he said that he doesn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, because I reached out to him as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was out of a whim, but sorry.
I didn't know at the time, and freakishly, I probably pulled a favor through a friend who knew him, and and he was intense, man. Like, at the first interview, I was like, wow, I can't believe I got this bloke. And he's straight away, it's like bang. And I'm like, wow, let's just get into it. Like, great, okay. And then I didn't know this, but this is a good lesson to learn. But who knows? But he was watching me the whole time. Like, so he started following me on socials and stuff. And yeah, and he kept an eye on me. And then he invited me on his podcast, which is No One Australian Podcast of Business.
Wow.
And then he started this thing called The Mentor, which invited business coaches and trained up people. It's just the business model slightly changed now. Now I did that. And then he rang me up directly and said, hey, would you be willing to look at doing some stuff with my stuff? I'm like, sure. And then we started a business together about 8 months ago, a company called Mentored Media. And so our whole mission is to make what you stand for stand out. So it's all about, If you're a florist, what do you stand for? So we got to make your brand actually make sense. So it's not just cookie cutter. It's not just putting pretty pictures like this, but it's got to convey what you want, what you actually started this whole thing for and who you're trying to reach to. It's not easy. And people are so time poor itself, like to run the operations.
Yeah.
I'm finding more and more, the older I'm getting, the more important it is to find experts in areas to help you. Like, you got to hire your team. Like, not even if you're not a business owner, you got to find a good accountant. You got to find a good person. You got to find a good gym. You got to find a good church. You got to find, because these are infrastructure around your life. If you got to pay for it, that's worth it. Every single cent. If your tax guy can save you X amount every year for 10 years, and that's fantastic. Some guys can't do that, but they're just the bare minimum. So you got to go build infrastructure around your life through finding people.
Mm.
And so that's how I started the podcast. Like, the whole mentored thing and with some business stuff came from always being on this process of taking a step and then, another door opens. Yeah, you can't, like, how boring would a movie be if you got told straight up what it's going to happen? Like, I think people go to motivational speakers and coaches and go, like, tell me what the steps are. It's like, that is just illogical and silly for any story. It's like, that's not living.
No. And you've been able to interview some pretty amazing people yourself. You know, you've got Janine Alice on there. You've got Dami Im.
Mm.
Osho
Ginsberg from Bachelor, and he had a crazy story.
Pete Evans,
yeah, he's a good bloke.
as well as Chris Green.
Chris Green, yeah, cricketer. He's a great guy.
Cricketer. So you've got some pretty amazing people on there. So finishing up, because I am mindful of your time.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
So three bits of advice that you can give to someone starting out and just needing a little bit of a boost.
Need a bit of boost. Well, I'll give a couple because there's soft skills and hard skills here. Like there's like the so, I don't like calling them soft skills, but they're like there's things like, you know, you've got to keep the end in mind. So like you're gonna die one day. That's really quite heavy to say that, but when you're playing basketball and you can see the countdown, it makes you play differently. It makes you strategize differently. I think some of us live and eat and plan as if we're going to live forever, that this infinity on the timesheet. That motivates me to be, it's like you got to know what season you're in as a person in decades, 10 to 20-year-old, 20 or 30-year-old, or go 5 years, 20 to 25. And you're like, well, I think that's how I think now is in blocks rather than as a whole brush. I'm like, gee, and it's all about, well, for me right now, responsibility is key. So, like, I just hit my 30s. So it's like, I've got two young kids. I've got a family. When I was 20, it was completely different. So if people are want to boost themselves, I'd encourage them to look at, well, find three people this week. Set up a coffee with mum and dad and just be absolutely awkward as you can be and be like, tell me what three things can you tell me about me that you think I'm really skilled at? And how do you see me best positioned? What kind of personality do you think I have? And with knowing that personality, what environments would I best flourish in? So you got to actually use this whole podcast thing to go interview three of your closest people in your life to be a soundboard to tell you what your personality is like in their interview and what their skill set's like. And don't ask things like, can you give me some feedback about me, about this? Because I think it opens out to be smash negative, like people searching for the negative. But I will say, word it like this, what do you think I'd really struggle with if I was to choose a job or choose this thing? What do you think I'd really struggle with? That's differently worded. And I think the last thing I'd say to people is that's about goals and that's about self-awareness. About your goals in life, I think I'll tell you this much. I'm starting to achieve things that 2 years ago even I thought, wow, this is what I'm aiming for if I get here. Wow. Everything is familiar after a certain period of time. Familiarity brings contempt and also complacency and familiarity. So familiarity is if you get used to the Qantas Lounge's business, that's going to be level zero. They'll be like, wow. And you have to go to the next lounge and the next lounge and the next lounge to actually get that kick of, oh, this is awesome. It's ridiculous how we are designed to get familiar with wherever we go. That's why it's not enough just to aim for stuff. I'm telling you, like it's always fun to go to new places and I think variety is key, but I want to ask everybody this question. One, what is your number to live on in life? Like real practical number, like financially, what number do you think you need to live on? And people are like, I want to be multimillionaire. No, you don't. Like you actually don't need to be multimillionaire to feel like you actually live a millionaire lifestyle. Yeah, and why do you want to aim for that? So what's your number? That's cool. Two, what kind of thing do you want people to say about you when you're not around, when you're dead? I think it's important. Relationship, that's the key. And the third thing is, are you prioritizing your health? And I think that's a big thing I'm on right now because I've got my family and I actually don't exercise for looks. And I learned this from Mark Boris actually. Mark is like 64. he looks 50,
yeah,
late 40s. And people might think with celebrity style people that they do it for vanity. It's like guys like Mark, and I'm actually adopting this, I've been inspired by this, is they treat their business or their purpose like an Olympic athlete treats their game. It's a game. Business is like a game to me, where it's like instead of business being a business, it's like the Olympics. You have to have trainers, you have to have a routine, you have to have food that you eat. And the food isn't there for pleasure all the time. It's there to, because every bit of food you eat actually gives you a bit of energy or has a function to it. So I eat for my focus. If I want to be, because I'm going to several meetings next, it's like it could be for this, it could be a fire here, it could be like a pitch here, it could be that. So my mind is like the athlete's fitness. So why would I want to struggle if I don't have to, when I could be eating blueberries for snack rather than chips? If blueberries are going to help me focus more, then I want the blueberries. And that's what athletes think. It's holding ourselves to a standard. It's like, if you want that razor sharp focus and you want that energy and no dips in the day, you need to do what these guys do. You need to run in the morning, or you need to find time where you walk, because that balances out things in your body, and you need to eat and drink certain water, because if you don't, you'll feel like there's a clamp on your brain.
Yeah.
And I felt that all the time, like back in the day where I drink too much coffee, not enough water, and my eyes are heavy, and my head, I can't think. There's like something on my brain or my head. It's like I don't have that if I just do these little things. And that benefits me, my family, and my business. So I don't eat for vanity or drink for vanity or exercise for vanity. Athletes look amazingly fit because of these things, because I have to do these things in order to perform. Eat for performance. Do things for your routine for performance, not for vanity. I think that's a good point.
And I think that's a perfect way to leave it. So Matt Purcell, thank you so much for coming on the Storybox podcast, sharing your stories with us and your advice. It's helped me even in this 40 minutes. So I know a lot of people are going to get a lot out of what you said. So thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks for having us, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
No worries.
I don't like this part, because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another incredible story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you'd like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up the Storybox on any podcast platform. It's that easy. If you did get something from our guest today, please share it around to a friend or family member that you think could benefit from hearing this powerful story. And before you go, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It will only take 30 seconds and it'll go towards reaching more people. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one. Your support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into the story box, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you next time.